this one who the clever of this tongue of wood knew what a man wished to him.
Came a man who said,
"Wrench me, all men of the world in wrath."
And instantly there was terrific clamor among the people against being enriched in rows. There was a loud quarrel worldwide.
Thank you.
to the
life of fun.
Thank you.
Music by my guest, Frank J. O'Terry. And Frank, we just heard
Versions of the Truth, which is a 12-movement song cycle composed last year based on the poetry of Stephen Crane, performed by Philip Chia, who sang both male soprano and baritone, one singer, two voices, and Trudy Chan on piano.
Well, good morning. It is 20 after 10 on Wednesday, the 21st of August, and you are tuned to WPRB, Princeton, New Jersey. Community-supported independent radio at 103.3 FM or online around the world at www.wprb.com. Welcome to another edition of Classical Discoveries. I am your host, Marvin Rosen, and I'm with you for the summer season on Wednesday mornings from 5:30 until 11, and on Saturday mornings from 5:30 until 9 for Treasures of Early Music. Now, you can become a fan of Classical Discoveries on Facebook and can also follow me, Marvin Rosen, on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining me today. Well, Frank, welcome back, and it's great to have you here. It's hard to believe that our 3 hours is dwindling very, very quickly, and it will, well, before you know it, it'll be gone.
Music does take up time, doesn't it?
It does move forward, too. It doesn't go back. And, well, we want us to go into a very serious issue now. This is something we haven't discussed yet, and I think it's important that we address it in a very serious way. And that is your obsession with recorded music.
You know. Indeed.
And
talk about
that's right.
The time going away. Yes, I have probably over 20,000 recordings at home
right.
At this point.
When did you begin?
I think the very first record I remember buying, I was at a street fair, and I got for a quarter the 3-LP set of All Things Must Pass, George Harrison.
Oh.
Which had just come out not that long before, so this was in the mid-70s. And then I chanced upon, so a number of years had passed, and by around the time I thought that I really ought to know something about classical music, I found this boxed set of LPs that was put out by the Reader's Digest, the world's great music, and had instruments on the cover. And I tried and tried, this is very early on, to get into that stuff, and the one record that I kept playing over and over again was The Rite of Spring.
I had a feeling you were going to say
that. And the Debussy Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. So even then, you know, the contemporary stuff was what drew me in. It was the sound world that I related to the most. I don't have that set anymore, but a Bartok LP I picked up soon after that is still one of my prized possessions. It's the world premiere recording of the Third Piano Concerto with Georgi Sandor on the piano with the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Eugene Ormandy. And why it's a prized possession is the flip side of that LP was a composer I'd never heard of, Nikolai Miaskovsky.
Oh, yes.
21st Symphony. Fabulous piece of music. I tracked down a score. There was a score at Patelson's music store that sadly went out of business a few years ago, and I picked up the score at the time. This was in the late 70s, and it was $2 for the whole orchestral score. They never raised the price. Nobody ever bought it, and it was sitting there.
Yes.
There it was.
Sometimes the more eclectic they are, the better price.
The better deal you get. Yeah,
the better deal you can get. What are some of the very unique things you have after many years of collecting?
Oh, unique things. Well, I've traveled now to 6 continents to buy recordings. Well, that's not the only thing I do when I travel, but every time I travel, it's something that I do. I always bring records back with me. I always look around for shops that sell recordings. And so I have tons of field recordings. I have about a third of the International Library of African Music's recordings of field recordings that Hugh Tracy put together over a 20-some-odd-year period. This is like 81 LPs. Of the 200 and odd records that they put out. I don't have all of it, but I have a good.
You know, you talk about it. You know, fun stories about people who collect. You know, and back many years ago when I was in management and retail, I remember a few guys that would come in, you know, to buy, and one story that I remember that I'm going to share, and I mean I'm not of course going to use the name, but one guy. This is many years ago. When I was working, he came into the store, And I would sometimes show these serious collectors the new release catalogs. And I showed this guy, one of the companies, the catalog, and he saw the BIS recording of a couple of the Tubin symphonies. And I remember, oh, Marv, I got to have this. As soon as it comes in, you got... I'm cracking up because the punchline is not what you'll expect. He says, Marv, I got to have that. I had the LP, and I got to have the CD, and it's something. Please call me as soon as it comes in. I said, well, I don't know the work. Could you tell me a little bit about it from the LP? Marv, I never listened to it, but I had to have it.
Well, you know, I have to confess, I have not listened to every recording I've acquired. Sometimes they come in faster than I can hear them. And as we've noticed today, the time goes by very quickly with just a few recordings. And the goal is, though, to actually eventually hear them. That is the goal.
They say, I had a friend who told me that if you keep buying and have stuff to listen to, the man upstairs will never let you go until you listen to everything. So the secret is to keep buying.
I keep buying. That sounds
and,
good.
Anyway, Frank, let's go back to music.
Yes.
We have some Greek music you're going to share.
Yes. Well, in fact, this segues in very nicely.
Yeah.
I went to Greece last year because the International Association of Music Information Centers had their annual conference in Athens and other places in Greece, but mostly in Athens. And so I thought I in advance, looked up composers from Greece, thinking things that I would really like to learn more about. And I learned about this composer, Emilio Thriades, who was a contemporary of Ravel's. In fact, Ravel admired his music greatly, and a very important early 20th century Greek composer. And I learned that a Greek label had put out 3 CDs of his music. And I tried to find them. Of course, unfortunately for me, and actually unfortunately for the people of Athens, the big record store in Athens had closed shortly before I got there, which was the place everybody told me that would have had it if anybody did. So I was unable to find those discs there. But unperturbed, when I got back to New York, I looked online and tried to mail order them, found them. One of them was on the German Amazon site. You know, they all have different things.
Yeah.
And another one was on this Greek site. I can't read Greek letters, unfortunately, and I got.
But you learn how to read Greek just so you could buy that CD.
I figured out his name. Actually, I went to sites that had both, and I did the searches on the Greek letters, and I found 2 of the 3 volumes. I'm still missing one of them, but this third volume is the disc of his 2 cello sonatas, which were written at the very end of his life. And
what would you like to do? We'll do like 15 minutes.
Yeah,
the first
listen,
movement of the first?
The first movement of the second, the sonata for cello and piano number 2, which I think was his last piece. And it might not have even been completed to his satisfaction. He was notorious for constantly revising his music, constantly changing things, even after premieres, and he was never happy. And he didn't live to change this one around so much. So this is what he lived to write of this piece.
And we're going to hear which movement of this? This is the...
Well, we can hear... We'll hear the first movement.
Of the second
cello sonata. And we should say who the performers are, of course, because
yes.
they did this incredible job, you know, reading through his manuscripts, which you can actually see if you go to the archive of the main library in Athens. They've digitized a lot of Riadis's manuscripts. But it's the cellist is Byron Fizetsis, and the pianist is Maria Astoriadou.
And this is the first movement of the second cello sonata.
Thank you. Thank you.
For another 15 minutes, I'm being joined by Frank J. O'Terry of New Music Box, and he's been my guest since 8 a.m., and we've been sharing some music, listening to some of his music, and we just heard
the second cello and piano sonata, the first movement of the second cello and piano sonata by Emilios Riadis, performed by Byron Fizetsis and Maria Astoriadou.
You did that very nicely, by
Thank
way.
You.
Thank you.
One visit to Greece.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we're really starting to wrap down in a very big way, and there are two more things we want to do, especially one of your pieces. But you had something else you wanted to share, so
yeah.
Why don't we take it
well,
away?
Well, I thought it would be really nice to share this world premiere recording from the 2010 Donaueschingen Music Festival, the Donaueschingen Musiktage, the world premiere recording of a manuscript for six pianos tuned a twelfth of a tone apart. This is a manuscript that was found after his death, the composer Ivan Vishnogradsky, and a composer of great, great importance to me. The very first published piece of my writing about music was an obituary in Ear magazine of this composer, Ivan Vishnogradsky. And I went to Paris 2 years ago and met with his son, who's now in his 80s, who's a big blues and gospel music collector, and we spent time mm-hmm. talking about that. But his father, Ivan Vishnogradsky, the composer, is one of the pioneering composers of microtonal music from Russia, spent most of his life in France in relative obscurity, but was the teacher of Messiaen. Boulez even took a class with him.
Right.
And just an extraordinary composer and somebody of great influence on me personally as a composer. Not just for the use of microtones, but for the use of the meters and doing very unusual metrical things. And it was quite a journey to get to Donaueschingen from, I was in Bonn, and I went there to attend the music festival, largely because I wanted to hear the premiere of this unearthed piece of his. So I thought it would be nice to share it.
Here we are.
Arc-en-ciel. Okay. Yeah.
And here we are.
For six pianos in 12th tones.
Do you have any performers? Did you mention?
These were the folks. I can tell you the names of the six pianists.
Sure.
Yeah. P. Tsen Chen, Christoph Grund, Florian Hölscher, Akiko Okabe, Sven Thomas Kiebler, and Julia Vogelsanger.
Again, excellent work.
Under the direction of Sylvain Kamberling.
Here we go.
Oh.
Maestro, what did we hear?
We heard the world premiere performance of Arc-en-Ciel 2, Arc-en-Ciel 2, the second part of the Rainbow, mm-hmm. of Ivan Vishnogradsky for six Wonderful. Pianos tuned a 12th of a tone apart
I
from
I love
each
that
other.
Sound, especially when they kind of edge in and out, you know. Well, we're going to go to one more piece of yours before we quit, but before we do, I just want to let you all know that you can visit my website if you want more detailed information about any of the selections played today on Classical Discoveries. The address of my site is www.classicaldiscoveries.org. The detailed playlist for today's program will be posted by this evening. Also, if you have any comments or questions, feel free to email me directly at marvinrosen@classicaldiscoveries.org. Again, that's marvinrosen@classicaldiscoveries.org. And where can people go, Frank, if they want to know more about you and your work, the new music box? I mean, give some of those
okay,
websites.
Okay, well, certainly to find out more, to read New Music Box, there's new content posted daily. You can go to www.newmusicbox.org to find more out about New Music USA, which is the organization that from which New Music Box is published. You can visit www.newmusicusa.org. If perchance you are interested in more information about my own music, I have a rather not very good website, because since I spend all my day editing a web magazine, I don't really take time to do my own, but there is a www.fjoteri.com. And now my music is represented by Score Street. So if you go to www.scorestreet.net, you can find my music there.
Very good. So before we sign off for the day, what are we going to be?
Well, I figured we got to end with some rock, right?
Yes.
We're going to rock out. And you heard that Vishnogradsky in 12 tones. I'm using only half the intervals, sixth tone. So instead of 72 tones per octave, I have a mere 36. And this is a piece for three electric guitars, electric bass, and drums from 2005 called Imagined Overtures. And this is the second movement, which is called Intelligent Design. And it does some oddball metrical things. And some of the things that you were describing that you hear and heard in the Vishnogradsky, albeit in a very different sort of more psychedelic context, kind of bringing it up to date for the 21st century.
And that's what we've been doing. It's been quite a very interesting, I guess, journey today from Greece to South America and America, your music, and talking about all sorts of issues. Frank, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, and I want to make one last plug for the group that's playing this. A really, really terrific group based in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Electric Eight. They are eight people playing electric guitars, and this piece was originally written, as I said, for three electric guitars, bass, and drums, so they double all the parts on this, and it's quite something. They're at www.losangeleselectric8.com, and if you're interested in this recording, you can find it there from them. And I should say Los Angeles Electric 8, the number 8, not written out.
Well, we rock out after a visit by my guest, Frank J. Oteri. Frank, again, thanks so much.
Thank you.